Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
This is a 680 The Fan podcast. To hear more live and local sports content like this, tune into 680 AM or 93.7 FM or download the Fan app.
Steve Phillips, friend of the show. Time to talk some baseball with him from SiriusXM's leadoff spot. What's it, 7 to 10, Steve? You can listen in the morning?
7 to 10 AM, and I am definitely not TJ Watt.
I don't think anybody would compare you to TJ Watt, but you have better hair, I believe. Than TJ Watt.
Good. I appreciate that. No, he's got pretty good hair. The Watt boys have some pretty good hair.
Yeah, but nothing like yours.
Speaking. Oh, that's so kind.
You stopped traffic.
Thank you.
Steve Phillips with us on the Hobson & Hobson Newsmaker line. So we were talking about it earlier. The Braves team, it's all relative, right? They're 19-9. The lineup's been struggling, the top of the lineup. When do you start thinking about not making wholesale changes, but maybe tweaking the lineup a little bit here or there?
Yeah, well, certainly there's not wholesale changes to be made, right? Everybody's locked in contracts, and they're all really good players. They're just, just off to a little bit of a slow start. I don't know that you have to worry about anything. While you're winning games, I think it affords you the ability to just ride it out a little bit. Right, so last year, remember, Ozuna was horrible in April. Mm-hmm. Horrible. He's carried the load this year. And Darnell stepped up and gave it to them. And because you have so much depth and so many options in the lineup that you can weather slumps by individuals and multiple guys just because you've got so many different players that can step in and deliver. And so I think it's the good news that they haven't hit because they're going to, and they're 19-9. And so this team's the best team in the National League. They're going to win 110 games. I'm not worried about them at all. I think that they're going to score. They're going to score in bunches. Olsen's going to get hot. Acuna's going to get hot. This is just Riley's going to keep rolling. Albie's back in the lineup now with the foot coming back from that. He steps right back in and starts hitting. Michael Harris, the second, is as good a bottom of the third lineup hitter there is in the game today. And so, if they've got rich people problems right now is what they have. If their biggest problem is their offense and they're 19-9 and they got the most powerful offense in the game, that's a really good thing.
Pull the curtain back a little bit. I don't know when this started, but this thing around baseball is there are some teams in some places where the GM makes the lineup. He tells the manager what to do. When do you think that conversation actually started? And what's the reality of that you know about in the game?
Yeah. So I think it started back with Billy Bean. And Moneyball in Oakland with Art Howe. I mean, it goes that far back. And Billy was the one doing it, not making the lineup, but he would send down what he thought was the lineup. And then it puts the manager in a position where, as the general manager, the guys who are doing this aren't saying, you need to make this your lineup. But they're saying, I'm strongly suggesting these are good options for you to consider. And then as the manager, you put the guy in a position where he's got to gauge his own credibility, his own confidence level, his own contract. And because it's okay to go against what the analytics say, go against what the bosses are suggesting, you just better be right. And, not everybody has the courage to take that chance. And I face the same thing as a general manager. When the owner starts making strong proclamations about his preferences for players or his disdain for players, I had an assistant GM who said to me, are you hearing the man? Just trade the guy because right now he's all hung up on this guy and all it's going to do is work out poorly for you either way. So go ahead and move him. And so as a manager, they're stuck in this position of, I don't really want my lineup to be that today, but they do. And if I disagree and I'm wrong, then I'm the one to blame. If I go along with it and I'm wrong, then it's not all on me because it was what they suggested me to do. And so it put managers in a tough spot. And that's why you see Bruce Bochy, Dusty Baker, Buck Showalter, guys like that. They don't play that game. Terry Francona, they don't play that game. No, they may look at the suggestions that are made but they'll do what they want to do after that. And Brian Snicker's doing what, I mean, listen, he can kind of pencil in his lineup, you know, as we speak, and pretty much get what line up the same way they do it. And they, you know, they pencil it in. Everyone's playing 160 games anyway.
So two things in that story. So I'm assuming it's the Wilpons. Who did they have a hard on for? Like, are you willing to mention the player? And do you know if there was a story behind it?
No, there was no story behind it. He just, you know, I think that you know, it was Kevin Apier was the pitcher, who's fine, really a good guy, and it was a warrior of a workhorse guy. They just, you know, Fred was worried that he would start to deteriorate and that the back end of the contract wouldn't be any good when for a while he was our best pitcher. And he sort of had it on him that he needed to do it. So he is the guy we included to get Mo Vaughn in the deal to the Angels. And the reality is they released Apier with about $40 million left on the contract. We got Mo Vaughn, and it didn't go all that well for us, but we deferred his money with Madoff, oh, by the way, made some money on his money, and he ended up not being able to play because of his body injury, gave out, yeah, on his knees, and we collected insurance on it. And so, you know, we deferred money, collected insurance on the money, and ultimately made money on the deal in the end. But, you know, it's the whole notion of, you know, what fight do you fight with your owner? What battle do you pick? And when I got let go, one of the things I said is you really need to find somebody who's strong enough to say no to an owner sometimes, and somebody who's mature enough to do it. And, you know, us first-time general managers, even if you get your second contract, which I did, and we won and went to the World Series and everything else, you know that you better play along with the owner, where if you bring in, you know, Theo Epstein, he's not going to play the game with the owner at this stage of his career. He did initially probably with the Red Sox, although he made some really tough decisions along the way. But managers and general managers, because of the organizational chart and the lack of security that you ever have in these positions, you find yourself not always doing what's right in your gut for the team, but to try to survive, to be able to do what's right tomorrow for the team. Because you're in a position where you've got to try to satisfy somebody above you that you may not necessarily agree with.
Steve Phillips with us from SiriusXM's leadoff spot, does a lot of work on MLB TV as well, the network. He joins us on the Hobson and Hobson Newsmaker line. So I just rewatched, for some strange reason, the Sports Century with Billy Martin and the feuds over the years, the many feuds that he had with George Steinbrenner, the interference from George Steinbrenner over the years. Can you imagine being a GM between those two?
Yeah, no, it would be really interesting. So the Yankees have always been a little bit different. Well, they're not anymore. They're more conventional than they used to be. You know, Brian Cashman, who was there with George Steinbrenner, and then when George passed away, Hal and Hank took over, and then Hank passed away, so he now works with Hal. It's more conventional now, right, where the owner talks to the general manager. Randy Levine was the team president. He would get involved. There were times where Brian Cashman would be told, hey, by the way, we just signed this Rafael Soriano pitcher for the Nationals last year. He's like, oh, really? I didn't even talk to him. And it was because George Steinbrenner with Randy Levine went through it, and they negotiated apart from Brian Cashman. And so it was really difficult. Like, George Steinbrenner was tough for the manager, tough for the general manager, because he was in part a general manager. Like, he chose players along the way. And what many owners will do is they'll say, I don't choose the players. I don't do that. I don't do what George Steinbrenner. I don't choose the players. But what they do is the money's available for the players that they want, and it's not available for the players that they don't. So they'll say, oh, you know what? I got an extra $10 million available for this guy. Where I'm like, well, if I had known I had that $10 million in my budget, I would have done different things to get to this point than I did. And it wouldn't have included even the guy you think I've got the money available for. But a lot of teams are, you know, face that. And look, they own the team, so they have every right to do it. The challenge is that you know that at some point, if it doesn't work out, that you're the one who's going to pay the price, and they're going to forget that it was them. For instance, Jose Abreu with the Houston Astros just got optioned to the minor leagues, right? He's a 10-year veteran. He's driven in 100 runs seven times in his career. He's a really good player. Now he's deteriorating quickly. Wasn't very good last year. Horrible this year. They sent him to the minor leagues. And the general manager, Dana Brown, the one negotiating with Abreu to get him to go down. But the reality is he didn't sign him. Abreu was signed before they hired Dana Brown, when Jim Crane, the owner, was running the team and making the baseball decisions when they had fired the guy before him. And so the owner hired him or signed Abreu. And so, you know, you're in a spot right now trying to solve the problem that you didn't create. And yet, you know, the owner's going to judge the quality and performance of the team and forget the fact that he's the one who signed Abreu and who's struggling right now.
Where were you and what did you think when you heard the Madoff stuff, what it was?
Yeah, so I was out of the Mets. I was in the media. Mm-hmm. And I was heartbroken because I had heard Bernie Madoff's name every year, every week for 13 years in the Mets front office. I heard Bernie Madoff's name. He was an investment vehicle for the organization. He was a very close friend of the Wilpons and the Katzes, but the Wilpons, the families vacationed together. Bernie Madoff was at every opening day party, every playoff party. He traveled to Japan with us when he opened the season there in 2000 against the Cubs. He was around and he was an investment vehicle. And there was a time when, Fred said to me, when you get some money set aside, we can create an account with Bernie. And I said to him, I said, I don't get it. Like, how is he that much smarter than everybody else? That when the rest of the market's getting 8%, he's getting 18. I said, I don't know. Why don't people just copy what he's doing, find out what he's doing, and sort of mimic that in some way? And his answer was, listen, he's a brilliant guy, president of the stock exchange, keeps everything close to the vest, doesn't share with anybody what he's doing, but this guy's a brilliant guy. And so then when we were going to defer money with Bonilla and with Mo Bond, it was, we'll go to the accounting department, have them crunch some numbers and see if we deferred the money out 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. We give a certain level of interest rate. How much money can we make on the money over the time? So the Wilpons had no idea what Bernie Madoff was doing, because if they did, they wouldn't have had me have the accounting department do some numbers and crunch numbers and iterations on what could happen. And so then when it happened, it was devastating because the financial betrayal was significant for the Mets. I mean, you know, we're talking about over $300 million. But I think it was the personal betrayal that was probably the most painful to Fred Wilpon. And because the way Fred was is that when he vetted you, he loved you. I was one of his guys too. Like, Fred loved me. He was like a father figure to me. And I talked to him every day for, 10 years in my life and everything. And so, this really, really hit him hard, hit the family hard. Jeff Wilpon and Mark Madoff were very good friends. Mark ended up committing suicide. And so it really hit everybody hard. Obviously, it impacted the Mets from a business standpoint, but from a personal standpoint, it's sort of the betrayal of Ippi Mizuhara and Shohei Ohtani. There's somebody very close to you that could keep such a significant secret from you and cost you so much money in the long run.
All right, let's finish up with this. Put on the prediction hat. Give me the two cities you think baseball is going to end up in when they expand, and how much do you think it's going to cost to buy in to sit at this table?
Yeah, so I think it's going to be Nashville for sure. That part seems really clear to me. And I have a feeling that Salt Lake City is going to make a push and that they may get the other one. They're going to look at one East Coast, one West Coast, most likely. And I think it'll be at least a $2 billion buy-in for it. And, which may be why, like, owners like Artie Moreno, who had the team up for sale, and the Lerners in Washington, who had it up for sale, may have pulled it off just because they're like, wait a minute, we're going to walk away from an expansion fee payout of some significance. We should probably hold on till then. But it's going to be a really significant amount of money to get in.
Steve, always appreciate you coming on. Hopefully we can do it again when we have more time real soon. And again, enjoy the rest of the week, and we'll catch up.
Okay, you got it. Thanks.
Steve Phillips, SiriusXM's the leadoff spot. You can hear him 7 to 10, MLB Network as well, with us on the Hobson and Hobson Newsmaker line.
This is a 680 The Fan podcast. To hear more live and local sports content like this, tune into 680 AM or 93.7 FM or download the Fan app.
Tonight in Arkansas, there's a mother tucking in her daughter and turning off the light. A business owner is burning the midnight oil. An at-home dinner date is plating up possibility. And it's all happening under one roof. How? The power of a conversation, like the one John from Integrity Solutions had with First Horizon Bank about his vision for a sustainable mixed-use building. Now it's not just words, it's life. First Horizon Bank, let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/John. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
Hey, sandwich lovers. Today's your lucky day. There's a whole new way to roll for lunch or dinner delight with Nucky's Hoagies in the Roswell Corners Shopping Center. Now open. Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell is family owned and operated by the sub-sisters, Stacy and Shannon, whose love language is food and Nucky's Hoagies, their passion. When you bite into a Nucky's Hoagie, you'll taste the difference. The softest hoagie rolls ever, along with hunger-quenching sandwich combinations. Make Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell on Woodstock Road your new favorite spot for lunch or dinner.